I think it's an interesting sidelight. Ready? Okay. Oh, all right. Well, when my father came to Pittsburgh, probably in 1907, he had arrived in the States in 1905 and went to a little town in Ohio where his brother lived, and his brother was his sponsor who brought him over. It was in Belair, Ohio, B-E-L-A-I-R-E. I'm not sure if it's double L or single. Belair, Ohio. And my uncle was in the scrap iron business. And my father helped him in his business. But he wasn't too happy with that because he was trained to be a watchmaker. And he found out about Pittsburgh being a center for such things. And he came here in 1907, really not speaking very much English. And what he did was immediately get himself a job with a jewelry store. And he had a job as a watchmaker. And in order to learn English, he went to the Irene Kaufman Settlement House down in the Hill District. And this was a hub of all sorts of social activities. Well, he learned to speak English. Of course, he learned to read and write English there. He learned about poetry and about music and about all sorts of interesting things that put him in good stead later on. And it was his education, really, his American education. And after being here, let's see, I think till 1914, he had a very active social life with groups of young people who were activists in socialist causes. But after that, he felt that Pittsburgh was too small and he wanted to get to see the big city. So off he went to New York.
Excuse me. I think I would like to change. Rita, you mentioned that your father stayed here until 1914 and then he decided to go to the big city. Would you like to tell us what happened when he went to New York?
Well, it wasn't too long after he got there that he met my mother. And that came about through this Robbins family who he knew in Pittsburgh. And they had a relative in New York who was a cousin of my mother's. Mm-hmm. And this relative took in boarders. And my father was recommended to her because of the Robbins family here. And when he rented his room there, there was another young man living there already. And this cousin of my mother's, I forget her name now, thought, how nice, she's gonna make a match. And she had my mother and her sister, these two cousins from New Jersey, and she decided to get these two young men together. So she invited the ladies, my mother and her sister Minnie. And it became a foursome. Mm-hmm. That they, as I said, they went to the opera together. And there was a lot of socializing, but eventually this other gentleman decided that my Aunt Minnie was not for him, but my father and mother had hit it off immediately, so that remained a duo. And that's how they met.
How do you spell Minnie?
M-I-N-N-I-E, yeah.
And was Robbins with one or two B's, do you think?
There are two families here. One is with a double B. And I think they were a single B, I think so. I'll let you know, because I can call my cousin.
Right, we were talking a little bit about your family life here with your... We have to jump backwards a little bit. How would you describe your own family's economic status in the early years?
Well, from what I'm told, my father did very well for a while at the time I was born, and then up until 1929. Things were nice for them. And then, of course, as they said, the bottom fell out, and everybody who had any kind of property was all mortgaged to the hilt, and my parents lost their property, and we did have to move to a small apartment. And so for a lot of years, things were difficult. I will say that, to their credit, they never let us know that they were in trouble. I found out afterwards, they never knew whether they'd be able to pay their rent each month. And yet they never burdened us with problems that may have made them unhappy. We were never aware of it. Not like later on, when we weren't financially well off and we lived in Squirrel Hill, life was different for my daughter, because the Squirrel Hill elite had a different way of life, and it was a bit discouraging for a child to grow up feeling that she can't have what the other kids have. And maybe that's still going on, but Squirrel Hill was a different way of life with the local residents. The friends we had were all in our same situation. We were all poor together. Musicians especially weren't doing very well.
What do you miss about the way Pittsburgh was? You're nostalgic about?
I can't say I miss anything, because I think the city has progressed. They've cleaned up the pollution, of course, at the expense of the mills being closed, and a lot of workers no longer have jobs. But the city has developed in a lot of ways that I think are very good. Educational system has improved. Culturally, I think it has a lot to offer. We were always impressed with the fact that we could do everything in Pittsburgh that the people in New York are doing. Theater, plays came here. There was more National Theater Company activity at the time. The musicians, top rank, came here and performed just as they did in New York, but here you could at least get a ticket. And we felt that it offered everything on a smaller scale, and you didn't need New York. We had a good medical center, a famous one, and we just felt it was a good kind of a city that was developing. I don't miss the pollution, I'll say that.
No. What was the role of Judaism for your nuclear family when you were raising them here?
Well, Aaron's family were much more involved with being Jewish. I always knew I was Jewish, but I think I told you in the beginning that we weren't practicing, even though I did go to Sunday school for years. But because of Aaron's deeper interest, I went along with him as far as having the children educated at the temple, so that they always went to Sunday school, and they were both confirmed, and they have their knowledge of Jewish history. And what else? How can I?
Excuse me, which temple was
that? Oh, Road of Shalom, S-H-A-L-O-M. Well, you know how to spell that. Yeah.
Did you celebrate the holidays?
Yeah, we always celebrated the holidays. This was part of Aaron's tradition, and I agreed that it was important that the children learn about it just as I did. Mm-hmm. And I felt that they would do what they want with it later on when they're grown up, and that's exactly what has happened.
And you probably had each of the grandparents coming in for holidays
period. Oh, yes.
Quite a long time, didn't
yes.
you?
Or we'd go back home, have Passover with mostly with my in-laws because they were more involved than my parents were.
Would you like to tell us how Aaron started American Thermoplastics and when that was, please, Rita?
Well, his answer to you would be two words, temporary insanity. When people would ask him that, he never would give the background, but I will give it to you. I forget what year. The business is now going to be 42 years old, so deduct from 1996. What have you got? 54. All right. In 54, in May of 54, he formally named the company American Thermoplastic Company.
Well, had there been something before that?
No.
Okay.
No, he was working elsewhere at the time. But friends of ours from New York came to visit, and the friends had a business going where they manufactured loose leaf binders and portfolios and a number of different plastic items. And our friends suggested that perhaps Aaron would like to sell the products in Pittsburgh and have, I guess you'd call it a subsidiary here. And sounded like a great idea because it was a good product and his friend was doing very well with his business, even though it was a new kind of a field. It was just really getting started. And so when they left us some samples of the products, and Aaron went out knocking on doors. He went to the various large companies, and sure enough, he got orders right away. He was a very good salesman, albeit quiet style. And in no time at all, he realized that it had merit. And so he and our friend established an arrangement where the product would be manufactured in New York and shipped here. And we would print logos and addresses, whatever the customer wanted, and we would deliver it. And that's how it got started.
Where were there any premises at that time?
Well, what Aaron did immediately was rent a room on First Avenue in a building that had a small office building that had printers, mostly printing firms were in there. And so we had a room. He felt that in order to have it professional, not to have a home address and a basement full of samples, he never wanted that. Mm-hmm. So he rented this office space, one room, one desk, one typewriter. And it grew like Topsy.
And he rented that space as early as 54 or before
yep.
that? I see.
Yeah.
And then when did it move to somewhere larger?
Well, he enlarged the amount of space by renting several floors in that building as the business grew. And then I'll tell you exactly, it was in 1962 that he bought the building that he occupied on Second Avenue up until 2 years ago. That was So 62. So from 54 to 62. And there on Second Avenue, he enlarged the space that he needed by renting space in the next building, because our own building was just outgrown. And then by the time 2 years ago came along, which was in 94, well, by then we had built the new factory out in Blaunox, and we had just totally outgrown all of the space on Second Avenue. There was no more to even rent. So it was essential.
Can you give us some idea of how the number of employees it grew and over what period of time?
Well, the very beginning was, as I like to say, he and me.
Yes.
And that went on for a while until I happened to become ill and just couldn't continue, which I also refer to as the best thing that could have happened, because it gave Aaron the incentive to get somebody experienced. I was totally unknowledgeable about how to do any of these things, and I had to learn how to use a gold stamping machine, and how to work with the printing equipment. So then he found somebody who could do what I was doing, and from then on it really took off. It grew, constantly grew. So eventually there were two people, and then four people, and I can't tell you exactly how many and at what stage it would jump to the next category. But I think that it developed over the years to about 180 people in those years. And when they moved 2 years ago, just about all of them came to the new building, despite the transportation differences of how they had to carpool and how they could manage to get out there. Mm-hmm. But they all, whoever could, came. They really wanted to stay with the company. So we've had very loyal people, and all through these 41 years, where there have been recessions, we never laid off a single employee. When things were slow, it didn't matter. We just kept them. Aaron believed strongly that you have loyal people, you have to treat them right. So.
How do you view your accomplishments and successes, Frieda?
Well, my accomplishments. I would say that I was a good homemaker. I think I was a good mother. You'd have to check with my kids on that. I think I'm a good citizen. And my accomplishments. Well, I think that by being a strong supporter of what my husband did, and always encouraging him, I think that was my most important role.
Is there anything in your life you wish you could have changed?
Well, if I had about 4 more inches of height, I would have been happier. And if I had blonde hair, I would have been happier. I thought those things made a difference. Of course, I've realized since that. No, I don't think I could change, would want to change anything. Things progressed in a very nice way for us. We had a good life, despite the difficult years with financial problems. But things worked out eventually, and it was good.
Frida, would you describe your community involvement?
Well, how can I begin with that? It goes so far back. Should have been more prepared for this. Let's see. Well, one of the things, I was active in the beginning with organizations like National Council of Jewish Women. I even joined Hadassah. And I was interested in that sort of thing. I'm not much of an organization person, I guess. Years ago, I did more of that. But I did a lot of volunteer work with Pittsburgh Council for International Visitors. And let me think. I forget what else I did over the years. Mm-hmm. Oh, Peace Links. I've been involved with them. And there must be others, but I'm blank at the moment. If I think of them, I'll let you know and we'll fill that in.
Could you just...
Well, I will say that I've been for 15 years involved with the music programs, and that's a community service. The series of recitals at Road of Shalom are now going to be the 15th season, and that has taken up a lot of my time working on that, so that we present programs which will hopefully enrich the community.
That's the Max and Daisy Emmerman.
Just Max.
Max.
Max Emmerman recital series.
Okay, thank you. And those are, if I remember, offered which time of the year is that?
Usually the four Wednesdays of June, and free to the public. This was one of Aaron's big accomplishments. His belief in offering this sort of pleasure to people who did not have to spend money and they could go to free concerts. He started a similar series at Allegheny College in Meadville about 7 years ago, 8 years maybe, plus the Baruch College in New York series. And each one of those series occupies a good bit of my time because I do all the programming and the hiring and arranging.
That's four concerts for each series?
Yes.
Right. And what kind of, is this all classical music or is it?
No, every now and then we'll have jazz or guitar or something lighter. It's a mixed bag.
Can you also describe to us Aaron's involvement in the community, not only in terms of the musical, which
well,
we like to him?
Yeah, he was on a number of boards of community affairs, the YMCA, for instance, the Allegheny General Hospital. He had wide-ranging interests. A lot of music affiliations. And he was a big believer in international affairs. And so he was quite involved at Pitt. They had programs that sponsored a lot of international groups coming to the city. His company was always on a list to show foreign visitors what a small business can do, and then they would take these visitors over to Heinz or some other big place and say, well, big companies are okay, but look what a small firm can do. His company was very popular for that. Trying to think of what else, you know. Certain things, after a while, they recede into your memory, and I'm not so sure I can think of anything else at the moment.
Did he have an active role in Rhoda Shalom?
Only as a contributor to their causes. No.
So, at what point did he start?
He also didn't like to go to meetings, and he didn't like committees.
At what point did he start giving to the musical endeavors of Pittsburgh? Was it at the time of the Emmerman series, or was it even before
that? That was probably the first. Later on, he did contribute and endow the principal clarinet chair with the Pittsburgh Symphony. What else? Music. He was always supporting Carnegie Mellon music department, giving scholarships to worthy students. Pitt as well. For a while we had a series at Pitt with recitals. He was active at Carlow College with a music program for a little while. It's less happened there than at these other schools. But he was always involved with the schools, with their music departments.
Duquesne also?
Oh, yes, Duquesne. Well, he gave a clarinet library, complete clarinet music to Duquesne. He gave the complete Groves Dictionary to CMU. We now have two scholarships going at Carnegie Mellon for the music department.
What are they called? Are they in somebody's name?
Well, one is a scholarship for a clarinet student. These are all annual events. Then the other scholarship is for a chamber music competition. That's also Carnegie Mellon. There's nothing more at Pitt.
Were they named scholarships?
Well, the Aaron Silberman Scholarship Fund.
You also gave and were active on the boards of the Y Music Society.
Oh, yes, we both were very active with the Y Music Society for many years.
And also the Pittsburgh Chamber Music Society.
Pittsburgh Chamber Music Society.
And the Symphony.
Yeah, well, the majority of things that Aaron really was close to were the music programs, mm-hmm. but the civic things were in his earlier years. He didn't, as he got older, he really didn't have the time and energy for all of that. So we had to confine it. Are we about done?
We can stop it.
Shall I mention the piano?
Sure.
That I have given an errand. All right, are we ready?
Yeah.
The latest project has been the donating of a Concert Grand Steinway piano, formerly owned by Pearl S. Buck, and now being dedicated to the memory of Aaron Silberman. It's a piano that is historic and beautiful and much needed by the temple. And I felt that it was time they had a proper piano. We're presenting all these wonderful artists and have to struggle on a piano that really wasn't adequate. And this was something I felt was very much needed.
When will that dedication take place?
The dedication will be April 17th. That's 1996. And there will be a recital, and the musicians will be of the first group. When we first got started, we had a lot of very talented young people, and I've tried to gather a number of them back again. And so far, it's all lined up. And this June will be our 15th anniversary. Okay.
Thank you.
How's
very
that?
Much. Would you like to just mention that again?
Well, yes, I'd like to say that all of the programs that Aaron sponsored were from the heart and a matter of giving back to the city what he felt.